Hello, welcome to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, July 27th, 2025. I'm Gene, a volunteer with Sun Sounds of Arizona. On this last Sunday in the month of July, we start our second hour by reading the obituaries. Today's list includes the following names: Eugene Charles Almendinger, James Bennett, Elgin McCoy Berry, known as Coy, Paula D. Briggs, Martin David Bunge, Deborah Chenard, Sarah Jean Clouser, known as Sally, Robert Patrick Cummins, Mary Ann Delahante, Doug Frank, Irene Gallardo, Peter Andrew Grossetta, Colleen Giori, Keith Lambeth, Judith Tatum Martinez, Suzanne Marie Pfister, Susan K. Schweit, Jeffrey Todd, known as Jeff. Sun Sounds extends its condolences and sympathies to the friends and families of the people listed in today's obituaries. And now we'll turn to the economy section of the paper. The article today, written by Russ Wiles for the Arizona Republic: these Arizona companies announced mass layoffs since the most recent jobs report. Arizona jobs picture changed a little in June, with the unemployment rate stuck at 4.1% for the fourth consecutive month, though the latest report does not reflect a recent spate of layoffs in the month of July. The number of non-farm workers around the state slipped by 59,100 compared to May, but it was still up by 14,400 over the past year, according to the Arizona Office of Economic Opportunity. Doug Walls, who is the chief economist at the state agency, called it a, quote, weaker-than-average, unquote, month for job changes, with overall mixed results. The state's jobless rate has stood at 4.1% since March, mirroring the national unemployment rate, which is also at 4.1%. Now, 1 year earlier, Arizona had a 3.5% rate. Arizona now sits near the bottom among the states for job creation so far in 2025. Job losses have been concentrated in government, with layoffs and funding cuts at the federal level affecting state agencies as well, including cutbacks at the State Department of Economic Security. But growth has weakened even in the healthcare sector, which has been the top area for gains in Arizona over the past year or so. Tariff disruptions and a sluggish economy have put a damper on job growth. The nation's gross domestic product slipped 0.5% in the first quarter of 2025. Now, the Metro Phoenix jobless rate spiked in June. They went from 3.7% in May to 4% in June of 2025. Layoff announcements have been rising in recent weeks, and those for July are not yet reflected in the June unemployment numbers. WARN, W-A-R-N, stands for Worker Adjustment and Retraining Notification Alerts. So far in 2025, they have been running above the level for the same period in 2024. Arizona businesses announced 7,583 layoffs for the year to date through July 15th. That's up from 7,501 last January through July of 2024. So here's a rundown of the WARN notices since the last monthly Arizona jobs report. The biggest layoff announcement this month involved 696 job cuts at semiconductor manufacturer Intel Corporation in Chandler, as the company continues to struggle to regain profitability. That was up from 172 reductions in their initial announcement. Intel, which is still ranked among Arizona's unemployment leaders, also slashed 385 Arizona positions last year in 2024. And that's because it's struggling against competition in areas that include mobile devices and artificial intelligence and personal computers and data. The Arizona Department of Economic Security, which oversees the WARN announcements and many social welfare programs, announced its own employment reductions in June. An initial announcement cited 500 expected job losses. But in the last agency's own WARN report, they had trimmed it down to 467 expected job losses. The losses are tied to federal funding cutbacks and will be felt in interagency efforts to help lower-income Arizonans assess eligibility for benefits like SNAP, that's the SNAP, the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program. One of the larger state agencies, DES, had a workforce around 9,000 at the time of that announcement. RWTL Capacity Solutions is a company that leases heavy trucks, and in June, it announced it was laying off 368 workers in Kingman, which is one of four facilities that it operates nationally. Now, the company is headquartered in Oklahoma City. It leases Class 8 trucks weighing more than 33,000 pounds, and it gives customers an option to buy the vehicles. Incidentally, RWTL's other locations are in Oklahoma, Texas, and Missouri. The maker of manufactured homes said it is laying off 210 people at its facility in Page, Arizona, from where it had been building homes for relocation elsewhere around the Navajo Nation. That company is called Zenni Homes, Z-E-N-N-I, Home. Zenni Home was planning to construct 160 of the lowest-cost steel-framed dwellings in partnership with the Navajo Nation, but they shut down the project, blaming contractual breaches and delays and political interference by the tribe, and most of those layoffs will involve Navajo workers. Another recent reduction was a 200-job cut at four Colt Grill restaurants in Arizona and one in Alabama. The company's owners and two others were arrested, and they face indictments for money laundering and labor exploitation practices that allegedly involved transporting undocumented workers from Mexico to work here, paying them below minimum wage. Law enforcement officials from the Yavapai County Sheriff's Office and the Department of Homeland Security conducted raids this week. Colt Grill has four Arizona restaurants, one each in Prescott, Prescott Valley, Cottonwood, and Oak Creek. Ruan Transportation, that's R-U-A-N. Another July layoff announcement involved 144 job reductions at the trucking and logistics firm Ruan Transportation in Tolleson. The move affects truck drivers and mechanics who were contracted to work at the Kroger Distribution Center in the West Valley City. Kroger, which owns Fry's Food Stores in Arizona, canceled the contract. Ruan is headquartered in Des Moines, Iowa, and it has been a family-owned business since its founding in 1932. And then, We Drive You. It's a shuttle firm. This month they announced 138 job cuts in Tucson. The San Francisco-based transportation company provides shuttles, charters, residential bus services, and more for communities, as well as college and workplace campuses and hospitals. And that includes an electric vehicle shuttle service in Sabino Canyon, partnering with the U.S. Forest Service. The company did not announce the layoffs on its website, and it didn't respond to an email requesting more information. And then we have Sodexo. This is a S-O-D-E-X-O. This is a multinational food service company in Glendale. They've announced 71 layoffs at their facility. Now, the company employs roughly 104,000 people across the nation at 3,400 restaurants, hotels, schools, senior living facilities, and other facilities. Sodexo did not respond to a question about the layoffs, but they listed the Arizona Christian University Hotel and Conference Center as the address for the job cuts. And then Hickman's Family Farms, the egg supplier, in late June said it would lay off 85 employees at its Buckeye facility as it euthanizes most of its hen population there and starts on its cleanup efforts. Hickman's owns operations and field facilities in Maricopa and in Colorado. Spectrum Plastics Corporate Group is a manufacturer of medical components. They announced 34 job cuts at their facility in Tucson. The company is owned by DuPont and based in Atlanta. They make tubes and catheters and medical balloons and packaging. They also have a facility in Nogales, Arizona. Then we have Equus, E-Q-U-U-S. This is a workforce development business. Equus announced 10 layoffs in June at a facility north of downtown Phoenix. The company provides various services, including career counseling, determination of aid for disabled individuals, and assistance to low-income families. It operates from roughly 350 locations across North America. And Nordstrom. Nordstrom Credit Bank. It's a business that is linked to the department store retailer. It said it has laid off 9 people in Arizona in June as it extended its credit card program with longtime partner TD Bank. Nordstrom, the company said, quote, as part of the extension, Nordstrom is transferring cardholder servicing and related functions to TD, which has expressed its intention to hire some Nordstrom employees, unquote. So the Nordstrom statement expressed confidence that the move, quote, will improve the experience for our customers with enhanced digital capabilities, support continued growth within our credit program, and provide the best possible service for our credit card customers, some of the most loyal and highly engaged Nordstrom shoppers, unquote. And finally, Quality Built, a company engaged in construction industry quality assurance services, including inspections, announced 8 layoffs at an undisclosed Arizona location as it closed its operations at the start of July. The business was also known as QB Intermediate Holdings. And that was Russ Weil's article from the Economy section. These Arizona companies announced mass layoffs since the most recent jobs report. We're coming up on 14 minutes past the hour, so we're going to move on over to the sports section now. The cover story for the sports section is about ASU football. It was written by Michelle Gardner for the Arizona Republic. It's entitled, ASU's 5 Games That Will Make or Break Its Season. Here's what Michelle wrote. There are make-or-break games in every season. The Arizona State Sun Devils won every one of those last year in 2024, and it proved crucial as they captured their first Big 12 championship in their inaugural season in that conference. But now comes the tough task of defending that title, and that task includes a focus on what we believe are, at this point anyway, the 5 games likely to determine ASU's fate in the third year of the Kenny Dillingham era. Most say it is tougher to stay at the top than to get to the top. ASU no longer looms as the underdog opponents might look past. Instead, Coach Dillingham's squad will be every opponent's big game. So are the Sun Devils up to that challenge? The word heard most often during Big 12 football media days in Texas was parity, and that is reflected in that 5 different schools were pegged as the favorite in various media preseason publications. And ASU, which is going to return 16 starters, was among those. So 9 of the 16 teams return their starting quarterback. So that looks like a position of strength conference-wide. ASU, with Sam Leavitt, certainly qualifies as a school led by an elite returning starter at quarterback. Now, the Sun Devils officially start camp July 30th in preparation for the August 30th regular season opener against Northern Arizona at Mountain American Stadium. Big 12 play begins for ASU on September 20th at Baylor. So here are those 5 most important games, 4 of which are against opponents that ASU defeated last year. First off, on September 20th at Baylor, this will be the Big 12 opener for both schools. Now, the Bears went 5-1 at home last season, the lone loss coming to Brigham Young by 6 points. Baylor is going to return 14 starters from a team that won its last 6 games of the regular season before losing the Texas Bowl to LSU 44-31. So while ASU quarterback Sam Leavitt has been singled out as the top quarterback in the Big 12, one pegged Baylor senior Sawyer Robinson ahead of Leavitt. 4 Bears were named to the preseason All-Big 12 team. That quartet includes running back Bryson Washington, return specialist Josh Cameron, linebacker Keaton Thomas, and punter Palmer Williams. Our second must-win game, October 11th at Utah. Utah is a team that dominated Arizona State in recent years. But that changed last season when ASU chalked up a 27-19 win over the nationally ranked Utes. That's a victory that served as the catalyst for last season's historic run. It put ASU at 5-1 on the season, and it attracted national attention. Utah is coming off an uncharacteristically bad season. They just won 5 and lost 7 last year. That's just the 3rd losing season in Kyle Whittingham's 20 years. No doubt the Utes head into the new campaign looking for redemption. The balance of the starting rotation returns. It's led by offensive lineman Spencer Fano and Caleb Lomu, both of them all-conference preseason picks. Then Devin Dampier, a transfer from New Mexico, will inherit the starting quarterback role. The 3rd key game will be October 18th against Texas Tech at home. Now the Sun Devils come into this one looking for some payback because they were dealt a 30-22 loss in Lubbock last year, in what was the first conference road game. The Red Raiders not only beat ASU, but they also beat Iowa State, the other team that advanced to the conference title game. But this season, Texas Tech has a difficult schedule. They face ASU, Utah, and Kansas. And all of those games are on the road. Now, the biggest question mark is the offensive line, which is returning just 1 starter. The strength of the team is the defensive line, led by end David Bailey and tackle Lee Hunter, both of them preseason all-conference selections. The 4th game that's critical is the November 1st game at Iowa State. Perhaps no team on ASU's schedule will be looking for payback more than the Cyclones, who were embarrassed in the Big 12 title game in which they lost to ASU 45-19. It was so lopsided that the Sun Devils pulled their starters early in the 4th quarter. This will be a road game in November for ASU, so there is a good chance the weather elements will be an obstacle. Being late in the season, it could also be a good resume builder for the postseason. The Cyclones went 11-3, highlighted by a 42-41 win over Miami in the Pop-Tarts Bowl. Junior quarterback Rocco Becht returns, But the true talent here is in the secondary, led by Jontez Williams and Jeremiah Cooper. So that could be an intriguing matchup against ASU's passing offense, ignited by Levitt, and it features wide receiver Jordan Tyson. And the fifth critical game, November 28th, against Arizona at home. Now, no, this should not be the toughest foe ASU will be facing, but it is the rival. It's also the last game of the regular season, so it is the Sun Devils' last chance to make an impression. With all the talk about how the college football playoff took shape last season, that will be important. Losing a game to a team you expected to beat that late in the season would kill momentum. Arizona is pegged in the bottom third of every projection. Some even have the Wildcats last. But we all know how much that matters. Quarterback Noah Fifita will be looking to bounce back from a subpar season and will have to do so without his big play weapon, Teteroa McMillan, who's a first-round NFL draft pick. Many think the transition to a new offensive coordinator named Seth Doge will help in that regard. And that was Michelle Gardner's article, ASU's Five Games That Will Make or Break Its Season. Well, speaking of the number five, here's another article featuring it, but this is about the Mercury, written by Jenna Ortiz for the Arizona Republic. It's entitled, Crucial Five-Game Road Trip Continues Against Mystics. The Phoenix Mercury continue a lengthy five-game road trip, the longest of the season, on Sunday, July 27th at the Washington Mystics. Also in the coming week, Phoenix will visit the Indiana Fever and the Atlanta Dream. The Mercury, which began their trip against the New York Liberty on July 25th, were tied with the Liberty for most three-pointers per game at the All-Star break. You know, three-pointers per game, 10 per game. The teams have not played each other since May 25th, when the Mercury defeated the Mystics 68-62 at the PHX Arena. But since then, the Mystics have had three players named to the All-Star game, including rookies Sonia Citron and Kiki Irifan, along with Brittany Sykes. Citron and Irifan started in all 23 games, entering the July 26th matchup with Seattle. Citron was second in scoring and rebounding for rookies, posting 13.8 points and 4.9 rebounds per game entering the weekend. Irifan handily leads all rookies with 8.3 rebounds and is third with 12 points per game. Sykes leads the team in points at 17.1 and in assists at 4.5. So entering games on July 24th, the Mercury were 6-4 on the road. That's the second best mark in the WNBA. The game will be shown locally on Arizona's Family 3 TV and Arizona's Family Sports. Now, the Fever might be without second-year sensation Caitlin Clark when the Mercury visit them on July 30th. But after that, it's a rematch and a chance for redemption against Brittany Griner and the Atlanta Dream on August 1st. And that was the article, Crucial Five-Game Road Trip Continues Against the Mystics. Our next article from the sports section is about baseball. D-backs to face Tigers Athletics on the road, written by Jose M. Romero for the Arizona Republic. The Major League Baseball trade deadline is fast approaching as the Diamondbacks wrap up a three-game series in Pittsburgh on Sunday, July 27th. As of July 25th, it looked like it could be right-hand pitcher Zach Gallen's last start with the Diamondbacks, as he has been talked about as a trade candidate. As the Diamondbacks move toward deciding what they will do at the deadline, they will spend the week ahead on the road with three games in Detroit, July 28, 29, and 30, and then 3 in Sacramento against the Athletics. So whether third baseman Eugenio Suarez will be with the club when they open a series against the Athletics on August 1st, which is one day after the trade deadline, well, that's still to be determined. But if the Tigers series is the last for Gallen and Suarez as Diamondbacks, it will be a tough one. Detroit, building off a trip to the postseason in 2024, is the leader in the American League Central Division and in good position for another postseason appearance. The Tigers feature the starting pitcher for the AL in the All-Star game, Arizona native Tarik Skubal, who was drafted by the Diamondbacks in 2017 in the 29th round out of Kingman. But he went to college at Seattle University and was drafted from there in the 9th round by the Tigers in 2018. He went 18-4 with a 2.39 earned run average last season, and his ERA as of July 23rd, it was even lower than that, 2.19. Skubal is in line to face the Diamondbacks during this series. Detroit landed 6 players in the All-Star game. Position players Riley Green, Zach McKinstry, Gleyber Torres, Javier Baez, and pitchers Skubal and Casey Mize. After 3 games in Detroit, the Diamondbacks will head west to face the struggling Athletics, visiting what had been a minor league stadium until the Athletics left Oakland to make Sacramento their temporary home. Diamondbacks manager Torey Lovullo said last week that he hoped to have conversations with players who had played for AAA Reno at Sutter Health Park in the past to get some working knowledge of the stadium and the lay of the land. The Athletics are led by All-Star infielder Jacob Wilson, who played his college ball at Grand Canyon, and Home Run Derby participant Brent Rooker. That was the article, D-backs to face Tigers and Athletics on the road. Our last article from the sports section was written by Bob Nightingale, a columnist for the USA Today. It's entitled, Diverse Quintet Set for Hall Induction. It comes to us from Cooperstown, New York. They come from the Appalachian Mountains to Aichi, Japan, to Wampum, Pennsylvania, to Vallejo, California, and to Cincinnati. They are power hitters, a slap hitter, a starting pitcher, and a relief pitcher. They are black, white, and Japanese. The quintet makes up one of the most diverse Hall of Fame induction classes in baseball history. This class features the first Japanese player to be inducted into baseball's Hall of Fame, a record 3 black players inducted in the same class, and the first player inducted from West Virginia in more than 75 years. Outfielder Ichiro Suzuki, starting pitcher CeCe Sabathia, reliever Billy Wagner, and the late Dave Parker and Dick Allen all will be inducted on Sunday into the Baseball Hall of Fame Museum, in front of a crowd that could be the largest in history. Hall of Fame closer Goose Gossage told USA Today Sports, quote, "It's an incredible Hall of Fame class. These guys all come from different backgrounds and eras. But the thing I love about these guys is their respect for the game and their place in history," unquote. Sabathia, the former Cy Young winner who won 251 games, is hoping that his induction will help pave the way for more young black pitchers in the game. He will be only the 3rd black pitcher to be elected into the Hall of Fame, with only 15 black pitchers who have won 20 games. David Price was the last back in 2012. Sabathia, who is a special assistant to Commissioner Rob Manfred, said, quote, "The only thing that keeps crossing my mind is, who's next? I'm on the search for who's next. What I can do to get that person or kid on the mound and going in the right direction," unquote. Sabathia meets with young players today in camps around the country, letting them know that if a kid like him can make it out of Vallejo, they can do it as well. He said, quote, especially with where I come from, just knowing that I'm going to be someplace where the best that ever played have been honored, it's really amazing. When I was still playing, Hall of Famer Reggie Jackson would tell me that having the Hall of Fame attached to my name would give me an edge in life. It's going to be amazing to finally get there, unquote. Now, when Suzuki arrived in Seattle in 2001, he was already a star in Japan, but he had no idea whether his success would translate to the United States. Well, 3,089 hits, 10 All-Star selections, and 10 Gold Gloves later, and he helped open the door for three-time MVP Shohei Ohtani and the current crop of Japanese players. Suzuki said, quote, we're able to play this game because of players of the past. Baseball is human beings playing against human beings, and to have the passion and the energy that is created by that is something that I really hope is still part of the game. That's what I really value. It's very important to me that baseball continues to be a game that has the human element to it, with all the emotions and everything that comes along with having humans play this game. If I can be of any help to the players, that's why I'm here. Now, Wagner, who's already allotting time for interruptions during his Hall of Fame speech to wipe away tears, he's going to remind everyone that he came from poverty. His dinners often consisted of crackers and water while growing up in the homes of different relatives, because his parents divorced when he was 5 and he attended 11 different schools. He'll let everyone know that he will continue to do everything in his power to help grow the game as a high school baseball coach, knowing it may not be the same as when he played, but the game still remains great. Wagner said, quote, our game's always going to evolve, and there's always going to be parts that we like and we don't like. Every era has that moment. But I think the game on the field is as great as it's ever been. But I guess the way we portray it and push it forward, that's the biggest thing, unquote. Now, Dick Allen, who died in 2020, represents the strength of fighting racism during his career. He received death threats playing in Little Rock, Arkansas, as the minor league team's first black player, and he was later pelted with garbage playing for the Philadelphia Phillies. Hall of Fame pitcher Fergie Jenkins, who along with Bob Gibson were the only other black Hall of Fame pitchers before Sabathia, vividly remembers the pain. They were not only teammates, but roommates in Little Rock. Jenkins told USA Today Sports, quote, Dick was a real personal guy. I mean, he got along with everybody. Nobody ever bothered me. But then Dick bought a car, and I think that was the wrong thing to do. They bannered that thing all of the time. They were always putting stuff on it. There were people in the stands who didn't like him with name-calling. It was just those times in segregation. We couldn't stay with the same players on the road. We stayed in a brothel one year in the summer. Another year we stayed in a funeral home. We couldn't eat at the same restaurants. We had to give our money to other players and have them order the food and have them bring it back to us in the bus. I only stayed a month and a half. Dick was there all year. He never forgot it, unquote. Well, Allen went on to become one of the greatest sluggers of his era, hitting 351 homers with a 5.34 slugging percentage. But his refusal to accept the bigotry and racial hatred in the country prevented him from getting the accolades he deserved. Hall of Famer Willie Stargell once said, quote, Dick Allen played the game in the most conservative era in baseball history. It was a time of change and protest in the country, and baseball reacted against all of that. They saw it as a threat to the game. The sports writers were reactionary, too. They didn't like seeing a man of such extraordinary skills doing it his way. Dick Allen was ahead of his time. His views and a way of doing things would go unnoticed today, unquote. Gossage said, quote, he's the greatest ballplayer I've ever seen in my life. There's no telling the numbers this guy could have put up if all he worried about was stats. He's the smartest baseball man I've ever been around in my life. He taught me so much about pitching and how to respect the game. He's probably the most misunderstood player in the history of the game. The shame is that Allen and Parker are not alive to stand on the stage themselves Sunday to deliver their speeches. Parker, who died just a month ago from Parkinson's, let his son know just what he wanted to convey before he passed. Parker's speech will remind folks of the leadership legacy that he left behind. Oh, sure, he was a fabulous player as an MVP and a 7-time All-Star and a 3-time Silver Slugger winner and a 3-time Gold Glove winner and a 2-time batting champion and a 2-time World Series champion. Yet he will be remembered as one of the game's finest team leaders, guiding the Pirates to the 1979 World Series title while mentoring Reds star Barry Larkin and Eric Davis in Cincinnati. Parker said in a Zoom call after learning of his election in December, quote, "The Pirates meant a lot to me. They were a great brotherhood, and they were always behind me. I could leave, come back, and everything is the same," unquote. And now they will be immortalized together on Sunday with Suzuki, Sabathia, and Wagner on stage, with Allen and Parker smiling from the heavens. And that was the article, Diverse Quintet Set for Hall Induction. We're passing 36 minutes past the hour, so we're going to move on over to the viewpoint section and read some opinions. This opinion piece was written by Greg Moore, a columnist for the Arizona Republic. It's entitled, "Why Would Black Voters Back Arizona Democrats Now?" Here's what he wrote. "Man, the Arizona Democrats are messing up. So they just got rid of their party chairman, Robert Branscum. Just don't ask anybody what he did wrong. I've heard nothing more than nebulous claims about him being a cranky meanie pants. There's a creeping feeling among the insiders that Arizona Democrats are a bunch of anti-black racists disguised as allies, and an open challenge is starting to circulate. Black voters need to think long and hard about whether they should continue to align with a party that seems more interested in courting moderate conservatives than serving its own base. So, see, Branscum happens to be black, and it looks like he was set up to fail by political heavyweights who should have been in his corner. Branscum didn't stand a chance against Governor Katie Hobbs or Attorney General Chris Mays or U.S. Senator Ruben Gallego and U.S. Senator Mark Kelly. None. There's a story going around that when Branscum and his staff showed up to work on day one, computers in the party office had either been stolen or wiped out by a factory reset. There's another story going around that a couple of elected officials were quietly telling donors to keep their checkbooks closed. And then those same officials started loudly complaining that Branscum couldn't raise money. It seems like Branscum was fighting for his job rather than doing his job for the entire 6 months. So rather than rallying against ICE raids or the Big Beautiful Bill, the party was fighting itself? Rather than leveraging No King's Day protest or knocking on doors in the Tucson-based congressional district primary, a faction of party operatives was organizing conference calls to get rid of their duly elected leader. Where were the town halls and the rallies and the outright calls for defiance? It's a horrible time for this if you're politically progressive or liberal. Donald Trump is doing just about everything he said he was going to do on the campaign trail. Eliminate government jobs? Check. Get rid of DEI protections? Check. Cut off education funding? Double check. All these moves are going to disproportionately harm black, Latino, and Native American people in Arizona and around the nation. Anyone who disagrees with Trump's policies needs a functional Democratic Party to represent their interest. Part of the reason that Branscum was swept out was that his predecessor, Yolanda Bejarano, was popular with folks like Hobbs. And that's nice, but Bejarano couldn't spell win if you gave her the W and the N, at least not in November. Branscombe's dismissal comes just a couple years after something similar happened to Nalexia Galloway, who happens to be black and was chairwoman of the Maricopa County Democrats. Galloway apparently steered a $24,000 business contract to her fiancé. Now that's probably a problem. But there's a group of black Democrats who think Galloway was unfairly targeted. They think her opponents watched her much more closely because she's black. Thus the challenge. Why should black voters continue to show up for Arizona Democrats when Arizona Democrats don't show up for them or actively oppose them? But why nitpick over semantics at this point? If you think it doesn't matter because black voters make up a tiny fraction of the Arizona electorate, consider Chris Mays. Apparently, she calls herself Landslide. It's in a bit of sarcasm intended to show the paper-thin margins that win at the ballot office in Arizona. Mays won her attorney general seat over Abe Hamaday by fewer than 300 votes. Estimates vary on the exact number of black voters in Arizona, but I can assure you, it's more than 300. Names of potential replacements are starting to circulate, starting with former State Senator Raquel Terran. But I'd be groveling at the feet of former House Minority Leader Reginald Boulding, although I have no idea why he would want that job. But next year's elections will be critical to mount any type of opposition to the Republican Party. Because Trump has done a lot of what he said he was going to do, but he has not strong-armed his way into a third term, at least not yet. He's still got plenty of time, but Democrats don't, especially not in Arizona. And that was Greg Moore's opinion piece, Why Would Black Voters Back Arizona Democrats Now? All right, we have time for some opinion pieces from people like you and me in the section of the paper called Letters to the Editor. The first letter goes like this. We are two retired science teachers with a combined 60 years of classroom experience who are frightened by the politically engineered destruction of our once vibrant public school system. Arizona's classrooms once enjoyed fully certified teachers for every subject taught. Now, the norm is to use tax dollars to fund religious schools, private schools, home schools, or charter schools. The problem with these alternative educational options is that they are not required to meet the same educational and fiscal standards required of public schools. We should demand that all schools that accept state funding test all students and release their results annually. The newest scam is the voucher program. It not only has no guardrails, but it is bankrupting Arizona's ability to properly fund public schools. A majority of Arizona voters opposed an expansion of this program in 2018. Yet our Republican legislators went on to demonstrate their disdain for the voters. Our question is this. How do we return to educational excellence if we keep the same legislators in office? Signed, Earl Barrett and Larry Dukerich in Phoenix. Our next letter goes, My family used to live in Kanab, Utah, my father's hometown. Back in 1948, when he got out of the Army, he went to work at the Grand Canyon Lodge on the North Rim. He knew that place upside down, and he shared that knowledge with us whenever we went camping there. We all loved it. We watched the beautiful stars from our sleeping bags and talked about things that mattered. When we moved from Kanab in 1967, the North Rim was a treasured place that we did not return to often enough. However, June 17th and 18th of this year, we stayed at the lodge, and we talked about old times, walked the trails, visited and played games on its east deck. What a lovely memory for us all. Most of the lodge on the outside was constructed with rock, but the roof was made of shingles. How could the lodge withstand a fire with shingles? Why wasn't this rectified in recent years? It may not have burned if this had been done. What happened to all the beautiful and interesting historic objects inside the lodge? Did anyone think to take down the blankets? How about Bridie the Burro? Was he too heavy to move? Is he just a puddle of metal now? My heart aches for this loss. Even though I have many happy memories, I can't give my kids the same. Signed, Estelle Lance in Grand Junction, Colorado. We're now at 45 minutes past the hour, so we're going to move on over to the entertainment section, and we're going to begin by reading today's horoscopes. We begin with the sign of Aries, birth dates from March 21st to April 19th. Are you making home improvements? Put the work in to nurture your foundation. For Taurus, birth dates from April 20th to May 20th, creative planning is your forte today. Stretch your visions to see the big picture. For Geminis, birth dates from May 21st to June 21st, reflect on what physically and emotionally sustains you. For Cancer, birth dates from June 22nd through July 22nd, you are given an opportunity to display your neighborly goodwill. For Leos, birth dates from July 23rd through August 22nd, meditate on your value, and intuitive insight seeks to boost your confidence. For you fellow Virgos out there with birth dates from August 23rd through September 22nd, you are just what the community needs today. Offer your skills and generosity to get a group endeavor off the ground. For Libras, September 23rd through October 23rd birth dates, contemplate the advancement of your long-term goals. Your intuition cooks up a strategy. For Scorpios, October 24th through November 21st birth dates, abstract concepts can sink in deeper when you have fellow support in bouncing ideas around. For Sagittarius, November 22nd through December 21st birth dates, bring in reinforcement for a job well done. Collaboration gets things moving. For Capricorns, December 22nd through January 19th, are you planning a trip? Travel can benefit a relationship. Research potential destinations. Aquarius, January 20th to February 18th birth dates. Treat yourself like royalty. Self-care heals. And finally, Pisces, birth dates from February 19th to March 20th. Show a special someone how much you care. Even the smallest of acts has significant results. And that was today's horoscopes. We turn now to letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren, her column Dear Abby. The first letter goes like this. Dear Abby, my husband and I love our 7 and 2-year-old grandchildren very much and enjoy spending time with them. The issue is, we feel we are being taken advantage of. Our daughter and her husband are still married, but lead separate lives. He works out of town and comes home most weekends. Her weekends usually begin Friday when she has to have someone keep the kids until he gets home, if he comes home. She returns Sunday night when he leaves for work. Our daughter expects us to pick up the grandkids from school and or the babysitter Friday and keep them every weekend. She doesn't ask. It's assumed that we will do it. If we say we can't or make other plans, all hell breaks loose. It's the end of the world because she has to change her plans. We have tried talking calmly with her about it, but then she threatens to not let us see the children at all. We're exhausted and we don't know what to do. Signed, Vexed in Virginia. And Abby responds, Dear Vexed, tell your entitled daughter firmly that she will have to make other arrangements for the children on 2 weekends a month because you and your husband are exhausted and need time to yourselves. Remind her, when she started a family, the children became her, not your, primary responsibility. You have generously given her free babysitting services for many years. Those services are expensive, as she will learn when she starts pricing them out. I seriously doubt she will react by depriving you of seeing them. It would be cutting off her nose to spite her face. Our next letter for Abigail goes like this. Dear Abby, 3 months ago, my husband was diagnosed with metastatic squamous cell carcinoma that had originated in his lungs and spread throughout his body. He died last month after a brutal battle with this horrifying disease. He was a former smoker, and he had worked in a factory that exposed him to various chemicals. During his struggle, we learned that getting a CT scan of his lungs every year would have detected his deadly cancer. His doctor never advised him to have this simple scan that could have identified it early in its development and possibly saved his life. Unfortunately, neither he nor I knew the importance of asking for the test. A CT is a straightforward, low-cost scan, generally covered by most insurers when it has been 15 years or less since quitting smoking, or when other exposures are present. Please share this message with your readers and encourage those with risk factors to request this essential procedure. It could make the difference between early detection and treatment or a life and death struggle with this lethal disease. Signed, Sorrowful in Indiana. And Abby responds, Dear Sorrowful, please accept my sympathy for the loss of your husband. I lost my husband to lung cancer, and I know how silently aggressive it can be. He, too, was diagnosed at stage 4, although he had not been exposed to the risk factors your husband was. I'm grateful that you wrote about how important a diagnostic tool a CT scan can be. Readers, please think about her important message and have a conversation about it with your doctor. And those were the letters of advice written by Abigail Van Buren. You can contact Abigail in two different ways. One way is you can go to her website, www.dearabby.com. The other way is to write her a letter and mail it to her. And you would mail it to P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, zip code 90069. And those were the letters of advice. In the comic strip, Zitz, drawn by Jerry Scott and Jim Borgman, there's only two frames, but in the first frame, Mom is looking at a picture, and she sighs, and then she goes, ah, and then she goes, oh, so cute, and then she hugs it to her chest, and she shows it to her son, Jeremy, and she says, your little outfit, oh, I can't even, and in the picture, we see a younger Jeremy with a little blue sport coat on and a white shirt and a red bow tie. In the second frame, Jeremy's outside sitting on a swing with his friend Pierce. And Jeremy says, I may have once been a ventriloquist dummy. And Pierce says, aren't past lives fascinating? And that was Zitz. Our next cartoon, Beetle Bailey, drawn by Greg Bryan and Neil Walker. In the first frame, Beetle's in the barracks, and as he walks by the beds, one of the privates says, well, did you apply for a promotion? And Beetle says, I sure did. In the next frame, Beetle's laying down in his bunk, and he says, there's no telling how far I can go. He goes on and he imagines, I could easily become a corporal. Then it's only a step up to sergeant, and I could go to officer school. A lieutenant, a captain, a major. I'm a general. Uh-oh, he said, I'm a general as Sarge comes into the barracks. And then in the point, the last frame, Sarge has kicked him in the rear, yelling, you're a loafer. And Beetle goes, loafer first class. And that was Beetle Bailey. Then we have Blondie, drawn by Dean Young and John Marshall. Looks like Dagwood's at work. Hey, hi, I didn't know you were still here. Didn't you work here a few weeks ago? And the kid says, sure did. I just dropped by to pick up my final paycheck. Apparently, playing video games on the computer doesn't go over well with the boss. I had no idea that an 8-hour workday wasn't just an urban expression. And don't even think about catching a quick nap at your desk. Anyway, it was really a tough week, but I finally tendered my resignation, and then he turns and walks away. In the last frame, Dagwood goes in to see Mr. Dithers. Hey, boss, I think I just met your nephew in the break room. And Mr. Dithers says, yeah, I'm surprised he lasted the whole week. And that was Blondie. And in the cartoon strip Peanuts, featuring good old Charlie Brown, drawn by Schultz, on the first frame, there's Linus walking along, Charlie Brown behind him, and Snoopy's walking behind Charlie Brown. And Charlie Brown says, I've been reading about the shake-and-throw method of training puppies. A mother dog can't hit a puppy, so she picks it up and shakes it and then drops it. At that point, they stop, and in the next frame, Linus, now looking at Charlie Brown, says, I don't believe a puppy would learn anything from that. Whereupon, the next frame, Snoopy picks up Linus, shakes him, and then drops him on his head. Bonk. And in the last frame, they continue walking, and Linus says, on the other hand, I guess he might learn a little. And that was Peanuts. Well, before we go, let's say happy birthday to some celebrities today. Well, congratulations to Juliana Hatfield, who turns 58. She's a singer. And then there's actress and comedian Maya Rudolph. She turns 53 today. And drummer Abe Cunningham with the Deftones turns 52. Comedian Heidi Gardner turns 42 today. I'm Gene, a volunteer reader with Sun Sounds of Arizona, and you have been listening to the second hour of the reading of the Arizona Republic for Sunday, July 27th, 2025. Have a great day.